More than a century has passed since Theodore Roosevelt was in the White House, but he still continues to fascinate. Never has a more exuberant man been our nation's leader. He became a war hero, reformed the New York Police Department, busted the largest railroad and oil trusts, passed the Pure Food and Drug Act, created national parks and forests, won the Nobel Peace Prize, and built the Panama Canal, to name just a few of his accomplishments. Yet it was the cause he championed the hardest, America's entry into World War I, that would ultimately divide and destroy him, according to our next guest, Eric Burns. Theodore Roosevelt's youngest and favorite son, Quentin, would die in an air fight. Exploring Theodore's relationship with the son, understanding Theodore Roosevelt as a father, reveals a more human side to Theodore Roosevelt, and it is one explored in the book The Golden Lad, The Haunting Story of Quentin and Theodore Roosevelt. Eric Burns is a former correspondent for NBC Nightly News and The Today Show. For 10 years, he was the host of the top-rated Fox News Watch, and he has won an Emmy for media criticism. Again, the name of the new book is The Golden Lad, and we welcome Eric Burns to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
I appreciate the chance to do so, Joe.
How did you come to this particular subject and this father-son relationship?
Because I had read about, and I'm not exaggerating here, about a dozen biographies of Theodore. And the story of Theodore and Quentin was, in some of these books, a couple sentences, in some of them a couple of paragraphs, in some of them more paragraphs scattered throughout. And their story is not only a fascinating one in and of itself, but tells a great deal about the character of Theodore, how we should assess it, and tells it in a different way from the image that most of us have of Theodore. And I thought this deserves to be an entire book. And so it is now.
Quentin was his youngest child, his youngest son. What was the relationship like? Because as you point out in the book, if it is possible for parents to have a favorite, this would be his favorite child.
This was his favorite child. Actually, that's why the word haunting is in the subtitle. This is not just a tale about a father and a son who got along very well. Theodore is the most bellicose, was the most bellicose man we have ever had in the White House. He was also, ironically, in my opinion, the best parent. The best child, as far as Theodore was concerned, was Quentin. And the tragic, or if you will, haunting irony was that Theodore had four sons. All four went to war, the Great War, World War I, and Quentin was killed. And that called into question everything that Theodore had ever believed in about the virtues. And he would have used a word like virtues, the virtues of war. Not only that, but a strong case can be made, and I hope that it is made with some strength in the book, that when Quentin died, Theodore was also doomed. He did, in fact, die 6 months after his son, Quentin.
He was a sickly child, much like his father.
He was, yes. And I know laughter is a strange response, but he had a lot of typical childhood ailments, but he also had some ailments that he caused himself. He wanted to see how far up his nose he could push a mothball. And so he did, and ended up having surgery. He wanted to see how far into his ear he could put a pebble, and he did. And he ended up having surgery. There were quite a few incidents like that. Quentin was, as you already can tell from just those two examples, Quentin was a very unusual child. And one of the reasons that Theodore appreciated him so much is that, as someone said about Theodore, he was at heart, Theodore, that is, 6 years old. and therefore having a young child like Quentin meant not just that he had a son, but even as president, Joe, Theodore had a playmate.
What did he notice early on in his son that he admired? Because you get that sense in the book that there were character traits in this boy that Theodore Roosevelt admired.
The other three boys were bright, well-behaved, but I think it's possible to say, without being insulting, and I don't mean to be, that they were not quite as interesting, not quite as devil-may-care. Quentin came home one day, got off the trolley car, and had a little pig with him. A little pig. He had found the pig roaming the streets of downtown Washington and brought him into the White House. And his father was amused by this. None of his other children would have done this. And Theodore's favorite story about Quentin, and mine as well, is that Theodore was meeting with Philander Knox, his attorney general, one day. And Quentin walked into the room where they were meeting, and he had a 4-foot-long snake around his neck and two little snakes in his hands, which were wriggling. And Knox was terrified. Theodore just looked up and said, Quentin, or Quenty Q, perhaps he said. That was his nickname for the boy, Quenty Q. There are some congressmen waiting to see me in the next room. Why don't you go in there and entertain them a little? And so he sent the boy with his three snakes into the next room to horrify the congressman. None of his other children would have done that. That kind of spunk, that kind of bizarre sense of humor, if you want to call it that, that kind of prank playing, that was Theodore, too. Theodore couldn't do it as president, but he could certainly appreciate his sons doing it.
Eric Burns is our guest. We're talking about the book, The Golden Lad, The Haunting Story of Quentin and Theodore Roosevelt. You write in this book, and you talk about Theodore Roosevelt's real devotion, if you will, to war. Talk a little bit about that, and then what it was that put Quentin into the position to be one of the fighters in World War I.
First, let me tell you briefly how he came to be as big an admirer of war as he did. I believe it's because he was such a sickly child, as you pointed out, and he overcame it through a rigorous weightlifting, dumbbell-using, Indian club-throwing, running regimen. And so he turned from an asthmatic weakling into a powerful young man, and I believe that influenced his view, as unusual as this may sound, on foreign affairs when he became president. He believed in strength. He believed strength could cure all. He had done it himself, and he believed that, he didn't say it in quite these words, but that a country needed to go to war because it brought a sense of purpose to the country. Any war, and the sense of purpose that it brought was much greater than any sense of purpose that a country could achieve in peacetime. The most startling of the quotes in the book, I did several drafts of the manuscript, and every time I typed this in, I just had to stop for a second, is that because it was so startling to me. He said, shortly after Quentin was born, that Sagamore Hill, which was the Roosevelt House, and actually still is, it's a museum now, that once Quentin was born, Sagamore Hill had everything a house should have. And the quote was, rifles and children. What an unusual man to lump those two totally disparate entities together and say that A house that had rifles and children now had everything that it needed.
Quentin joined the aviation corps and ultimately died in France. What was his father's reaction to that decision and to fight in the conflict?
All four of his sons fought, and Theodore himself wanted to fight. He asked President Wilson, whom he despised, if he could lead a Roosevelt regiment, a so-called Roosevelt regiment. Joe, he was 59 years old at the time, and he hated Wilson, Woodrow Wilson. Wilson hated him. There was no chance he was going to do it. There was no chance it was going to happen if he had been a lot younger. He was 59. That's how much war meant to him. His four boys, golden lads all, signed up, and there was no pressure from Theodore. They signed up because that's how they grew up. That was the example that had always been set for them, the virtues, again, to use that word, of warfare. So no pressure. The boys did it. Theodore, in one letter, and in one letter only, and I read all of the letters that he wrote to his children, said, I'm a little concerned about this, or I was a little concerned about this. Four boys is a lot for one family to contribute to a war. And then he quickly dismissed the thought by saying how proud he was that his four boys were doing this. And when it comes to Quentin, he should have been very apprehensive. Quentin became a pilot. First of all, he couldn't see the eye chart when he took his physical, so a friend stole a copy, and he memorized it, Quentin did, the night before. He was also airsick. How many pilots do you know, Joe, who suffer from air sickness? Now, he eventually got over this, but for Quentin to become a pilot, and it's explained in the book, really, his fascination with being above earthly life. So I think it does make sense in the book. But Theodore had a lot of reasons to be apprehensive about Quentin. He would have known about Quentin's eyesight. Maybe he wouldn't have known about the air sickness. Quentin's being a pilot is something that should have given his father pause.
But it was instilled in all of the children that there was an obligation to go to war.
I don't know if I'd put it that way. It was more of an example. For instance, the only time that Theodore really got a chance to go to war was the shortest war this country has ever had, the Spanish-American War, which was fought in Cuba, and that's when Teddy led the charge up Kettle Hill, which is mistakenly called in history books San Juan Hill. He led the Rough Riders, and it was that that made him a national figure. Eventually, the story of Daddy leading the charge up Kettle Hill became a bedtime story for the children, no doubt heavily elaborated upon, enhanced. In the house in Sagamore Hill, there are animal heads hanging on all the walls, some with huge antlers. Just everything about the house bespoke hunting, either hunting animals, which Theodore did after he was in the White House. He went on a safari that brought literally thousands of animals or animal parts back to the Smithsonian and the Museum of Natural History in New York. It was just the environment that they lived in. The boys soaked it up. They didn't need to be told. It was what they wanted, too, because it was what they observed everywhere as children.
Eric Burns is our guest. The name of the book, The Golden Lad, The Haunting Story of Quentin and Theodore Roosevelt. Quentin is a pilot, and he dies in France. How does Theodore learn of this and the immediate response?
He learned about it in stages. A friend of his who was a journalist came to Sagamore Hill one day and brought a telegram which indicated that Quentin was missing, might have been shot down, but part of the telegram had been crossed out. The whole telegram couldn't be read, so suddenly suddenly Sagamore Hill was on red alert. A couple days later, German radio announced that Quentin had been killed. The message got to the White House and was immediately sent to Theodore. Theodore never got over it. The saddest of all the images in the 6 months he had left to live, during which time he lost the will to live. Now, he was a bit sickly at this stage, but he would have fought, and he would have prolonged his life if it had been any other tragedy. And he'd had many in his life, but none compared to this. He gave up the will to live, and one day a few friends came to visit him in the hopes of brightening his spirits just a bit. This was maybe 2, 3, 4 weeks. I think it was probably about a month after Quentin had died. And they searched the whole house. It was empty. And they were baffled because Theodore never went anywhere. He didn't leave the house. Suddenly, they decided to go out into the barn, and what they saw stunned them. And they ended up never talking to Theodore, just looking and walking away. Theodore had his arms around Quentin's horse and his cheek against the horse's mane, and was standing there hugging the animal, crying. And his friends watched him for a few minutes and then departed.
I do want to mention Quentin's mother, Edith, and her role in this, in understanding the loss of her son and comforting her husband.
It was interesting that the first person to whom she spoke after, other than her husband, after getting the news, was this reporter who had brought the telegram. And she wasn't making perfect sense, nor could we expect her to at the time, but she ran out the front door of Sagamore and said to the reporter, we've got to save him. We've got to do everything we can to save him. She meant Theodore. She somehow knew that Theodore was not going to recover from this. As for Edith herself, I won't go so far as to say she expected it, but she was preparing herself for something to happen to one of her children. And there's a remarkable quote in the book from Edith, who says that you if you raise boys to be eagles, you can't expect them to grow up and be sparrows. And that was her philosophy. It didn't comfort her. She was as shattered as her husband, but she lived a lot longer than her husband. She kept the will to live and continued to be a mother to her other children.
Quentin was only 20 years old when he died.
Right.
And then he, as you point out, he died just a short time later. I guess it's ultimately impossible to know how much of it was the illness and how much of it was the grief and the shock of losing his son.
Well, I mean, you can't, you know, it's been said that people die of broken hearts, and of course that's not meant literally, but we know now, medical science knows now, the powerful connection between mind and body. And the reason I think it's fair to say that Quentin's death killed Theodore, Theodore died 6 months later. I said there were other tragedies that he got over. Theodore's first wife and mother died on the same day in the same house, 12 hours apart, when he was a younger man. And Theodore, I mean, it would have looked like a Max Sennett comedy if you didn't know why Theodore was doing this. But he spent the whole day running up and down the stairs from one bedroom to another, providing what comfort he could. He lost the two most important women in his life in one day. And he was very, very close to his father. His father died unexpectedly. His brother, one of his brothers, died of alcoholism, which made at a very young age. Theodore carried it on after all of these. As a matter of fact, he never mentioned any. I just mentioned four deaths of people very close to him: mother, father, first wife, and brother. He never wrote in his memoirs, in his autobiographical writings, never mentioned any of these deaths, never. So that was his way of facing this kind of tragedy. Ignore it. That's why I say there is such a strong case to be made for saying that Quentin's death killed Theodore, that Theodore died in War II, in his vicarious war. Because he had a track record in the past of toughing it out through tragedy. Now, again, I concede that he had contracted on an expedition to South America. He had contracted malaria. There were parasites in him. He was 59 years old. Always certain, by the way, Joe, that he would die at 60. He was off by 1 year, so he was not in the best of health. Still, there was nothing wrong with him that would have proven fatal had he not lost the will to live, and he lost it.
You're right. The line in the book, Quentin's death was not just another loss; it was the loss, the ultimate tragedy for Theodore Roosevelt. An occurrence that called into question everything for which he had stood in his life. What were the ripple effects of that for the rest of the family?
There were no ripple effects that I was able to learn, Joe. The tragedies of, I've been using that word a lot, but there were a lot in the family of the loss of Quentin and the loss of Theodore 6 months later didn't inspire much in the way of analysis in the family, just a great deal of grief. What I wanted to do for the reader was write this story ambivalently, which I think is how one takes it. I've had people tell me that after they finished reading the book, they felt a tremendous amount of sympathy for Theodore, for his loss, and for the way the loss occurred, how Quentin's death occurred. I've had people tell me that they've changed their mind about Theodore and found him to be a hypocrite, sending four boys off to war. When one of them died, he couldn't take it. And yet, war was the ultimate good of life, as far as he believed. So I think if the book is successful, one of the things it does is give us a different view, or give us a view of a different side of Theodore's nature, and perhaps make us wonder a little.
The name of the book is The Golden Lad, The Haunting Story of Quentin and Theodore Roosevelt. The book is published by Pegasus. Eric Burns, thank you very much for joining us this morning. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
You're welcome, Joe, and it's certainly my pleasure as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, The Golden Lad, published by Pegasus Books, by Eric Burns. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.